Blog Talk Radio. Merle with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. I'm here in Greensboro and in North Carolina, and I'm at the Proximity Hotel. Yeah, I'm calling from my room here. Wow, this place is really green. I don't mean the color. I mean green with everything. And I'll talk about it later. This is so fabulous. I can breathe in this room, air that's clean, circulated, and a whole bunch of other goody stuff. And we have one heck of a show today because while I was in Greensboro, I did a whole bunch of things. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't bring Esther, my rubber chicken, with me. She's really upset, and she's been, sending messages to me. She's been calling in here. There's nothing I can do. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Esther. I'm sorry. I forgot to bring you. Next trip, I promise I'll bring you when I go to Williamsburg. Don't worry about it. This is the first time I didn't bring you, but anyway, so I'm here, and we're going to do a whole bunch of talking about places. I've been to a place called Replacements. Well, it's not like just broken dishes, or like if you have a broken dish or a crystal or something. It's an amazing place. We're also going to talk about the new International Civil Rights Museum, which involves a Woolworth lunch counter. And we're going to also talk about beer, B-E-E-R, as opposed to bear, B-E-A-R, or B-A-R-E, pairing at Natty's. It's a pub and a restaurant and a beer and a microbrewery. But the first thing we're going to do, because I already have somebody slated and now they're probably waiting to go on the air, and you're on the air. You are. Hello. You're on the air.
Hey, Merle, it's Lisa, Replacements.
Lisa from Replacements. Now, so the whole thing is, it's not like if just like I have a dish that's broken or a piece of crystal. It's like more than that, isn't it?
We have more than 13.5 million pieces, and some of them are more than 100 years old. And as you saw yourself, we have more than 7 football fields of china, crystal, silver, and collectibles. So there are so many pieces there that we can help folks try to replace those pieces that are valuable to them. And as we talked about earlier today, sometimes value isn't a dollar amount, but it's a mental value that people attach to their dinnerware and their tableware that brings back memories of times gathered around the table with loved ones. And that's a lot of what we hear from our customers, and that's actually our mission, is to connect our customers to their most cherished memories.
And like the people, is this a thing just local? Do just local people come there?
No, we have customers around the world. We currently have more than 10 million customers worldwide.
And, as far as actually coming to the place, do a lot of them actually come to the place, or is this like they can go on the internet and say, oh, this is the piece I need?
Well, actually both. We get a lot of customers in who come down from Canada and from other countries as well. We do see a lot of people from around the world who stop in to shop with us, and we do see a lot of international customers and customers from across the country that really work with us online because they can't actually get into the showroom.
Wow, that's really cool. I understand. I saw a sign. It says you're pet friendly. The place is
yes.
pet friendly. A place that has dishes and all these things.
Well, you know, our front doors read "All well-behaved pets welcome." So we are a great stop for people traveling with their pets. We're located, you know, Greensboro's located pretty much halfway between Washington, D.C. and Atlanta, and we're halfway between our North Carolina's coast and mountains. But we do welcome all pets to come in and shop with their owners or come to work with their owners. We actually had a possum in not long ago. So
awesome.
We have a possum, and as I mentioned to you, we've had a duck come in before, a pot-bellied pig. All kinds of unique animal friends have come in to shop with us.
That must be hysterical.
I tell you, it's a lot of fun to see the different pets that come in and to get to interact with them. And Esther would have been welcome if she's well-behaved.
Yeah, well, the problem is I made a mistake. I left Esther home. She was very upset about it, as you could hear. She was quite upset, you know. She's at home, and, well, I promise her on the next trip I'll bring her. In the meantime, you must have some great stories about the place.
We do. You know, we are a very unique business, and I think that's it's really wonderful that we are able to reach our customers emotionally. You know, we were talking earlier today when you came to visit. One unique story to us is remember the Fancy Feast cat food commercials where the cat's drinking out of,
I
should say, the really pretty, you know, glass? Well, they were actually filming one of those commercials, and the cat broke the glass. So they stopped what they were doing. They contacted us and asked us first if we could identify the pattern because they didn't know the pattern, and our research department was to identify that. And then we were able to overnight them the pieces, the replacement pieces, so they could finish filming the commercial.
That's something else. You'd think they'd have more than one of those pieces just in case.
I don't think the cat had ever broken anything before, but I'm glad we were able to help them with this. And
yeah,
we hear from a lot of people who come in, and maybe they have a piece of their grandmother's china or their mother's china, and they don't really think that you're going to be able to find it for them. And then when we're able to look it up, and maybe we have to bring our research team in, but they'll take a look at it, and when we're able to identify it and then bring them new pieces out, or I say new, but additional pieces out, then they see them. A lot of people just burst into tears because they just don't expect to see that, and it has such a sentimental value to them.
So, in other words, it may be, you know, it could be, I'll call it like a cheap china versus an expensive china that they have, but it's just something sentimental.
It's something sentimental to them, and you know, we have dinnerware that, you know, really covers all price ranges, everything, you know, the higher end to something that perhaps, you bought recently, you know, at a department store or at, you know, a shopping center type store.
So how did this all come about anyway?
It's an interesting story. Our owner, Bob Page, and founder, was actually an auditor for the state of North Carolina, and he didn't like his job very much. He always talks about that. He said people just hated to see you coming. You were going to go through and audit them. And he had this weekend hobby of going to flea markets and looking for crystal and china. And as people heard that he was out looking around, his friends asked him to be on the lookout for their own patterns that had been discontinued. And as he started doing this, he started taking the request and writing them down on index cards and storing them in an old recipe box. And, you know, as people heard about what he was doing, he was getting more and more requests. So we decided, you know, he really wanted to do something he loved for a living. And that was what he loved, going out. He loved the hunt of finding these pieces. And he took a chance. His family thought he was crazy, but he took a chance. And today we've got more than 13.5 million pieces. I mean, he actually started this in the attic of his home. You know, he would wrap, you know, the orders on his kitchen table and take them down to the post office or to FedEx and turn it around to where we are today with 7 football fields.
Wow. And it's when you say 7 football fields, is it 7 football fields long or as high as well? Because I saw the stats.
The size, well, the square footage is a little bit more than 7 football fields, but the stacks and what we're talking about are shelves that go from floor to ceiling, and they're about 16 feet high, and they are just filled with inventory.
Wow. And where do you get the inventory from?
We get it several ways. We have people who, from one reason or another, want to get rid of their pieces. I know my first week on the job, I ran into one of my sorority sisters who was going through a divorce, and she just wanted to get rid of her wedding china. She did not want that reminder. So we have people contact us, whether they come to the retail store or they call us from all parts of the country and want to find out if we're buying their particular pattern. They may be downsizing for one reason or another. We also have a network of what we call our star suppliers, and they are like our eyes and ears across the country. They subscribe to an index, which is published quarterly, and tells them the patterns we're looking for and what pieces in those particular patterns. And they go all over the country. And we also have star suppliers in Canada, and they're looking for those pieces that we're hunting for our customers. We also get inventory from the manufacturers themselves.
Wow. I mean, so, like, let's say if I had, if I wanted to, like, bring you something that's not a set, but I had, let's say, normally it was a set of 10, and now I have, you know, 5 plates and 4 whatevers, and you know what I'm saying? That kind of a thing?
And we buy by the piece. We do not buy by the set, so we do buy by the piece. And what I would recommend if people are interested in selling to us or to find out if we're buying is to call us at 1-800-REPLACE and ask to speak to one of our purchasing agents, and they can tell you whether we are buying pieces in that pattern at this time. It's really based on supply and demand.
And I guess you could also, like, if you do it online, you could send a photo of something you have as well, right? And say, this is what I have?
It's best to call, and then they'll follow up with you from there.
Yeah. That's really cool. What are the you also? I saw the historic the little museum you have there. What's that all about?
Well, we do have a museum as part of our retail store. It has some very unusual pieces, some one of a kind pieces. I think I was showing you my favorite piece in there is an antique silver curling iron made in like 1892. We have all kinds of interesting pieces in there that you can take a look at.
The first one we looked at. There was
we had a golf trophy that was made by Tiffany that was presented to a course up in New York. It was made in honor of a man. And then we also took a look at as well some of the other unique pieces. For instance, we have. We change our displays up a good bit, but we have a big display on chintz now, which is very popular and seems to be making a resurgence. And we also took a look at shoes where the heels are actually made out of Wedgwood china.
Yeah, but that's, not for sale, though.
Not for sale. You know, someone actually found those at a yard sale, and they were still in the original box, and inside the box it came with instructions on how to walk in those.
Walk softly, really. And don't let anybody kick you in the heel.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. The way you have it set up, so when someone comes in, there's like one big area, there's areas to look at. There's also, you don't have access to the back. But if you're on a tour. Tell us about the tour. Where does that kind of bring you?
Well, we do. We're one of the top destination attractions for the Greensboro area. In fact, Rand McNally named us one of the top 25 free attractions in the country. And we have tours every 30 minutes starting at 9:30, and those run until 6 o'clock in the evening. So if you go through, you get to go through and see the big stacks of china, go through and see the folks unpacking the china and processing the china, get to go by the restoration areas where you can see our silversmiths at work restoring some very beautiful pieces, and get to wind through and see some of our animal friends along the way who come to work with their owners every day. And
that's
the tour winds up back in the museum area where you can take a look around and also shop. And that's a good thing about visiting us. You can shop and then ship your purchases home.
Oh yeah, that's right. Now you also have like for people like I don't want to say on a budget, but in other words, there's an opportunity of certain things that are on sale, and there's also an opportunity of what is called Bob's Corner. Is that what it was?
That is. We went back there today, and there you can find some pieces, odds and ends type pieces, but there's some real treasures in there too if you look around. And I think you and I saw a couple in there today looking at pieces. And they're from various patterns. We also have an area of overstocks that you can look around, and there's some heavily discounted prices there. And, you know, we're fortunate now. A lot of times we are able to work with manufacturers and get special discounts on pieces, so we're able to pass
right.
that along to the consumer.
Now, I also, we were talking about that if things that can actually be restored.
That's right. Most of our restoration work, we generally do crystal, and we also do silver. We do china on a case-by-case basis because it is a bit more fragile. But we had some pieces that came in. For instance, after Katrina, they had a beautiful tea set that was just heavily damaged in the storm that stuck sitting out in the mud for some time, and they sent it to us, and we were able to restore that. A lot of the damage we see, though, it's kind of man, machine, or Mother Nature, and a lot of what we see is garbage disposal damage, where you stick something in there and it chews up maybe your fork
right.
or your spoon. We're able to restore that. As far as crystal, you know, you get a chip on the rim of your glass or maybe the foot on the glass. On a case-by-case basis, we're able to work and to take those chips out.
So I could just see it, you know, having some really fine crystal and, you know, like it's a little bit chipped and then, you know, somebody accidentally cuts their mouth and you go, oh, my God, the crystal is chipped.
Yeah, and we do get pieces in,
instead of worrying about
instead
of worrying about the person bleeding.
Oh, I would hope not. Hopefully it would never be that bad. Hopefully they would see that first.
Uh-huh. But then you can get that restored, but at a certain, I had noticed that you can only get a certain amount. That, like, in other words, they kind of sort of cut it down a little to restore
yeah.
it.
They
right?
do. The manufacturers actually allow an eighth of an inch to be taken off the top. So there's
mm-hmm.
a little leeway where we can work on that. If the chip is very deep, you know, we may not be able to repair it. But again, it really is a case by case basis.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
but,
you know, if you
yeah.
have glassware where maybe the gold gild is worn off around the edge, we're able to restore that. We have a lady there who actually paints that by hand.
Wow.
And it's really interesting to see her do that.
Wow, that's so cool. So you can definitely spend some good time in there, a lot of time there, just looking.
Yeah. You can. There is a lot to see. And one other thing we do that I think your listeners may find interesting is that we offer a free pattern identification service. So if you have a pattern that perhaps you inherited, or if you're like me, you have crystal that's never, ever been used, and I have no clue what it is, you can bring it in, or you can email us or call us, and we'll work to identify that. We have a research team with about 25 people, and that's what they do. They identify patterns, and they add them to our database every single day. Probably 60 to 70 new patterns a day are added, and that's something that we're more than happy to help folks out with, try to track down their patterns.
So, I and also, I guess there's a difference, I think, where I was commenting about some old china that I have, that there's a difference between if you're looking at the bottom and saying either made in China or just as China.
That's true, and a lot of it's made in England, and some of it was made here in the United States. That back stamp is so important. It tells you so much. It tells our research team so much about, it gives them a lot of clues as to where to look and try to figure out, you know, where it was made and to figure out the pattern name. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
the pattern name's on the back. Sometimes the shape of the plate may be on the back, and people see that on there and think, okay, that's my pattern name, when in fact it really isn't. But it's a clue that can help our research team determine the name of the pattern.
Yeah, now when I get home, I'll have to take a look at the bottom to see if that $10 set that my father managed to get at E.J. Corvette's back in God knows how many years ago is really worth something.
Well, we'll work with you to help, you know, try to identify and help figure that out. I mean, we do have a lot of people go to our website, which is replacements.com, and we have hundreds of thousands of photos, and a lot of people go and match their patterns that way.
Right. Is it replacements, in other words, with an S, .com?
Yes. Replacements with an S, .com. You know, and a couple other things that your listeners may find interesting, we do a lot of seminars in our showroom for etiquette or for decorating ideas.
Really?
That we do, and unfortunately, you know, we'd love to have everyone come in and attend these, but we realize that, you know, obviously with a customer base around the world, they can't. So we have actually recently put some videos on YouTube where you can go in and get etiquette tips as well as decorating ideas on how to use your china in new and exciting ways to accent your home.
So when you're doing etiquette, do you serve tea and make sure that, like, the pinkies are up?
Well, it's not quite to that extreme, but it's some good basics on how to set the table and how to be a good guest and what to do with your napkin, you know. So many people
and where
know,
the forks
you know,
go and
the
spoons.
Where the forks
and
go, and absolutely. So you can learn some really interesting aspects there. You know, a number of people who work with me have looked at this video and they're like, I didn't know that. Well, I didn't know that. So it's some good tips on etiquette and also on the decorating ideas as well.
Right. You were just commenting on a video. Do you sell these videos?
No, you can find them on YouTube, actually. If you go
okay.
to YouTube and enter in replacements, you'll actually find three videos on our YouTube channel, the decorating, the etiquette, and also a video tour of the company so that folks can see what you actually saw today.
Right, right. And by the way, with the pets, what's the most unusual pet that someone is bringing?
I don't know. I guess,
one of the workers.
You know, the possum, you know, was
Oh, so the possum is somebody's pet from
the
work there.
Oh, no, that was a customer. That was a customer.
Oh, okay.
As far as associates, during the time I have been there, I've seen an associate bring a rabbit to work. We have people bring cats in, the occasional lizard. But mostly dogs. Big dogs come in to work.
Do you have an area outside just for the dogs? I mean, like,
we have a huge front lawn, and they go out there. We see a lot of them out there exercising and running and playing. Visitors stop out there and turn their dogs out to let them run.
Yeah, we didn't go out there because it was wonderful weather today.
Yeah, we had monsoon rain. We're having it here today. It hasn't rained in more than a month, I think. And unfortunately, you came in during what's beginning to seem like a rainy season.
Yeah, well, I didn't bring it. Don't blame me.
We would thank you if you did. We've needed the rain, so we would thank
you. Oh, okay, then I brought it. If you needed the rain, then I brought it. If you didn't want it, I didn't bring it.
Then you brought it, because we needed it.
So, So what now? Is there any like intention of expanding or doing anything to the place?
You know, we are looking at possibly expanding, and that is something that we are going to be spending the next few months looking into, and then we'll make a decision.
And then when you say expanding, meaning you know, adding
more
building,
more warehouse space, because
right.
you know. We're running out of space. You know, our inventory continues to grow.
Well, when I see this,
something.
Yeah, when I see those stacks, I mean,
uh-huh. We've got a lot of pieces, and that inventory continues to grow. So we're in the preliminary stages of deciding what's going to be the smart move. So it's possible we could be expanding in the next year or so.
Right, and I'm sorry. And how many years has this place been around?
Since 1981, so we're going to be 30 years old next year.
Wow. Jesus. And you don't even look it.
No, you are way too kind.
But that's really, really cool. You know, so this is one really good place for somebody, you know, coming to Greensboro, just no obligation. There's no, you know, they're not paying anything. And they get a tour. and they can or buy some. I notice you have there's a whole area right now of things for Christmas.
It's Christmas every day of the year at Replace.
Oh, so you have it all the time.
We do. We obviously more decorations will start coming out in the September, October time frame, but
uh-huh.
we do have Christmas decorations year round. And one of the other things that people seem to enjoy when they stop by to visit with us is our Great Wall of China. And you saw that when you were there today.
Yeah.
We have a whole side of a hallway. We have our top 500 selling China patterns, our top 150 crystal, and our top 150 flatware patterns that people stop and look at. And you see a lot of people there, you know, trying to find their pattern, or perhaps they see a pattern that they know someone who has that pattern. So it's kind of fun to see folks there checking that out.
Yeah, that's nice because, like, there are things, especially, but you can go into the whole thing regarding with Christmas of
mm-hmm.
decorations that people that's, like, you know, oh, I have, you know, this broke and, you know, I had four of these and I, you know, looks better with four and, you know, whatever kind of thing.
I tell you, we get a lot of calls the day after Thanksgiving.
For people who are broken,
yeah, and you know, we hear from a lot of people the day after Thanksgiving who may have dropped something and broken it, and we are more than happy to help.
Great. So, you have any like unusual other than the fancy feast of, or actually not unusual? Is there like something for the time you've been there, like something that you laugh over? You can't, you know, it was like something that you joke about because it was so funny of something happened.
Well,
anything
you know,
like that.
We have different instances of stories we hear about from people, and we have on our website. We have hundreds of letters from customers who have written us about their experiences and how we were able to help them. And you know, one of the stories that Bob enjoys very much, a young man. His parents were out of town for the weekend, and he hosted a big party while they were gone, and pieces got broken. And he was trying to replace them before Mom and Dad got home and found the broken pieces, and we were actually able to help him keep his little secret and get those pieces back on the shelf before his parents figured out what happened.
That's pretty good. Do you get any, like, letters? Well, I probably not letters. No one gets letters.
Well,
like,
we still get some letters. We get some letters, but mostly
uh-huh.
email from folks. Folks, you know, who their kids were playing in the house and throwing the ball and broke something, and they're trying to get that replaced rather quickly before, you know, the parents figure
somebody
out
that somebody else.
Happened,
easy,
or,
yeah.
We get a lot of those.
You know what you should do to, like, if you can put together, like, the letters of the best stories of like what happened, how the piece got broken. Does anybody ever say and tell you like how the piece got broken? Like, you know, my dog did it or whatever.
We get some of those. I haven't seen any of the dog did it though. It's mostly the husband or the children, and in many cases the wife. But and that's the thing, you know, for us with having all of our pets in the workplace. None of the pets have ever broken anything that we know of.
Wow.
The people, I've broken a few things, I hate to admit, but the pets, our animal friends, not that we know of, have never broken anything.
Well, that's good to know. Well, I don't think, you know, like unless, like with dogs, unless they're like running around,
yeah.
you know.
But we have, you know, you and I are both cat people, and we have heard
yeah.
from people that their cats have knocked glasses off, some gotten around them where they were sitting, and they've knocked those off and broken them.
Yeah, well,
so,
they got attitudes.
They do, don't they?
It's the attitude. This is my house. I own everything. I'm allowing you to live here, and if I want to break a piece of china, that's, you know, bear with, you know, deal with it.
So we've not gotten the dog did it, but we have gotten the cat did it.
Okay. Well, again, it's replacements.com, and I think this is really cool. And yeah, well, I don't know if it'll help with an address. Where exactly in Greensboro can the people going?
Well, we are located at exit 132 on Interstates 85 and 40. So you can get there, and you'll see the signs pointing back to us.
Okay, cool. Well, great. Well, it's great having you on
the
show.
Great having you today. Well,
yeah,
thank you.
This is really cool. I have to say I was very delighted. I had this pic in my head. I pictured like this whole place, and all he had was like dinner plates all over the place. I didn't realize it was a lot more, you know. I guess you have to go online and like, you know, look at this and get a whole sense of it to understand.
Yeah,
so.
And you can visit the YouTube, and you can see our video there and take the tour of
Great. Right. All right. Thanks again, and I'll be in touch.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening, and enjoy your stay in Greensboro.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. Replacement. Well, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to actually be replacing. You could just go there and just because you want a new set, too. So, you know, that's a thing, too. And I'm going to go on to the next thing right after a commercial. Got it.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yes, and you can get these wonderful brownies, goodness gracious, on www.brownies.com. Yes, it's brownies.com. Nothing to even have to even know the name of the company. They're fabulous. And right now, I think I have a sale because Father's Day is coming up. So, you know, you can go check it out. And so now that I finished my commercial, we have our next guest coming on. Yes, we do. Do I have... Who do I got? Do I got Amelia? Who do I have? Who's on the air? I put you on the air. Who is it?
Hey, it's David.
David. Oh, okay. Hi, David. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I was working all day, so now I'm off and giving you a call.
Okay. Now, you said you also going to have the beer
guy? Our head, I'm with Natty Green's Pub and Brewing Company in Greensboro, and hopefully our head brewer will be joining us, Sebastian Wolfram. So I don't know if he's called in yet or not.
Clicking on, I see another phone number. Come on, clicking on. Okay, if I'm just going to put this out there, there are two things that happen with this show. When you call in, if you press 1, just so people know, if you press 1, that means you get to talk to me. If you press 2, I can't put you on the air. So in case whoever is calling in wants to talk to me, you have to dial again and press 1. In the meantime, so why don't we talk a little bit about, let's talk about the, I guess that person got it. Because I'm watching my switchboard, suddenly that phone number disappeared, and I'm going to see if it comes on back again. But I wanted to,
It's okay, he's German, so... it's taking him a little time to get used to our American phone. I'm just joking. He's working his way on.
He just say, you know, I'll have the beer and you will enjoy it.
Exactly.
But I guess so. Yeah. But I think he's on now. Do I have you on? You on now?
Yes, I think so. At least I can hear you guys.
Oh, okay.
Hey,
this
Sebastian.
We got the German guy too.
Yes, that's me.
Okay. All right, so let's first get into this. I want to talk about the brewery itself. So you have, it's like a microbrewery. And how many beers can you produce at one time as you're doing it? You have to do you have more than one machine?
No, we do one brew at a time, but as you can make multiple brews a day, and they get ready within 2 weeks, most of them, you can make 8 to 10 different beers a week if you want. We only do two or three, and often those are repeats because people have their favorites, and so you keep making a set of standard beers all the time, and then you
right.
throw in a couple of seasonals here and there. So
now,
we have 12.
12?
12 beers on tap at any time.
Uh-huh.
At the location.
Now, just so I get an idea, how long does it take to make a beer from the time you're starting with the hops? Is that it?
Yeah, basically everything starts with, you look at your recipe and it calls for a certain amount of malt, which is barley that's been converted into malt, and that's the base ingredient for any beer that's really made at this point anywhere. And so that's your main ingredient beside water, and then halfway into your brew day, you start using the hops, and those are only the basics, and then you still don't have beer, you just have a sweet solution with some hoppy flavors to it, and then at the end of your brew process, it goes into a tank with yeast in it, and the yeast actually then turns that sugar into alcohol and CO2, and so that's when actually beer's happening. Let's put it that way. So
now, in terms of the beers, I mean, I guess not everything is made like if what is it like? It's something like a wheat beer. What does that mean?
The wheat only means that you use more. Most beers are made without wheat. Let's put it that way. And so there's a certain set of styles from Belgium and Germany in this case that use half of the malt that's being used is wheat. Some use wheat flour, and it depends a little bit. But the base ingredient is always. Always the barley, and so you just use a lot more wheat. And wheat has the benefit of giving beer a lot more, texture when you drink it.
Right.
And so that's the main reason why these wheat beers are so thick in that way. Besides them being unfiltered, so that's one of those things. But wheat beers, you can brew fairly fast. So I was just talking about the brew process.
Mm-hmm.
And those wheat beers. Just because the way they're made up, most of them are ready within 5 or 6 days, and the rest of the ale take about 2 weeks from start to finish, so you can serve them or drink them. So that's the timeline you're looking at.
So now, looking at me who knows nothing about it, how do you get the flavor to be different from one beer to another? What is it?
So there's a couple of different flavor elements, but the sweetness and the roast flavors and a dry bitterness and all these things come from the water and then mostly the malt. So the malt comes in from very light to basically, I would say burnt to describe it in simple terms, really dark, roasted, and it has then that, the charred flavor. You can buy malt that has been smoked with different types of wood, so it carries those smoke flavors. There's malt that is actually sour. In the process, it turns sour. So when you put it in, it adds citrusy acidity flavor to it. So that's basically your main tool right there, and then hops is that second big flavor component, and those are everything that has to do with bitterness and then aroma. So when you smell on a beer, all these very interesting from citrusy to piney and medicinal sometimes, those are all the hop flavors that you.
Now, I'm just curious. This is not, is this the same malt that you would use, like, when you're making a malted, you know, when you're using, you know what I'm talking about, a malted, like a milkshake, and you add malt to it?
It's, essentially, it's the same. It's the same way. Bakers use malt, and then mostly, I mean, everything that ferments in some form that's not, you know, wine or some other kind of fruit that can ferment by itself. So all these whiskeys that are made all over the world, they all have malt as a base ingredient. And the trick is that barley or any kind of cereal that you harvest is not ready to, you know, to grow in that sense. But that's what everybody needs. You need the same mechanism that nature has to grow a new plant in these brew processes to break everything up so the yeast can actually ferment it. And so all these fermentables that are made in different ways have all used malt. And yeah, and then also the, you know, these chocolate malted balls you can buy. It's all that. So what happens is, as during the malting process, which only takes about a week, they basically soak the grain that was harvested. They soak it in water until it starts germinating, like it does in the field. It rains a lot, and then the seedling starts growing. And then within 5 to 7 days, that process is stopped by quickly drying it with heat. That's the roasting part. And once that's done, you end up with a very, you know, sweet, soft kernel. And that basically happened because of the growth that starts activates enzymes to break down, you know, to break down what the kernel has stored, all the energy and the protein, the energy is the sugar, the proteins, everything that the plant needs to actually grow. That's been not used but opened up, and that's sort of what then everybody uses, and you know, you can eat it straight up. So there's certainly brewers who just reach into the malt bag and eat a hand or two sometimes. So.
Now let me ask you something. I mean, I know people do things with, like, wine pairing, you know, pairing wine with certain foods. Do you do anything like pairing beer with foods?
Well, Natty Greens, we directly as a company, we certainly explain beer to people, and we, you know, when people ask, we will tell them what would go with certain foods, but we're not necessarily, you know, hosting these beer dinners where this is specifically designed to, you know, to pay to you know, match beers with certain dishes. But it's done quite a bit, and we all talk about it all the time because beer certainly has made its name recently
Good
match.
For instance, I know you guys do a whole thing with pulled pork. The pork.
Yes. Yeah. The Carolina barbecue.
Yeah, David, how is the pork made? I mean, is this thing, like, cooked for 9 hours or anything like that?
Yeah, it's your traditional slow roasted pulled pork, Carolina pulled pork. So it's a chopped pork plate, and then what we really take it to another level is we add our chipotle barbecue sauce, which is a sweet and spicy, very thick, very 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 tasty sauce. Traditional North Carolina barbecue, there's basically two variations. You have a Eastern barbecue, which is one of your more famous, which is a vinegar and spice-based barbecue. And then in the western part of the state, they've introduced more tomato, so it gives it more of the traditional barbecue sauce kind of look. And what we've done is our pork is seasoned in a way. It does have that traditional vinegar with a spice flavor if you were to just eat the pork itself, but then once the chipotle barbecue sauce, it gives it a little bit of a southwestern meets Memphis kind of barbecue flavor, which once people get a taste of that, they can't get enough. So it's a big hit with us, and I guess you'd know after yesterday. So
yeah, well, I What did I say I ate? Stamies? Is that what the name of the place?
Yes, Stamies Barbecue.
Stamies Barbecue. I just want to go on the record as saying it may be very famous, but I didn't hate it. I just didn't find it as good as yours.
We appreciate that.
I don't think they'd like
to hear that, but
well, I happen to have found it to taste. It was like very, very dried out. That's what I got, and I was trying with the chicken, and the chicken was very dry too. I don't. Maybe I hit them on a bad day, on their bad day or something. But
maybe,
you know, I'm not sure. But I'm just kind of saying. You know, for a company that, you know, so famous, I just wasn't as impressed. But to get back to this, this is why I want to say something. Is there any, let's say, beer that you would pair, with some beers that you would pair with having this, like pulled pork with the barbecue sauce?
Well,
yeah,
Sebastian, go ahead, Sebastian. We were talking about this earlier. He has a much better way of explaining it than I do. So,
okay.
Sebastian. So, just the barbecue itself. There's a couple of ways you can look at this, and certain people. Let's put it this way. There's two kinds of beer drinkers in that sense, and so there's this whole group that with all these craft beers that came out. Really, really developed the flavor for hops, and so these very hoppy, intense, you know, flavored beers that, besides the normal beer flavors, you know, have this, you know, some people call massive amount of hops to it. Those beers lend themselves well to these kind of sweet, spicy, very strong flavored foods because they both, you know, equally, you know, very strong, and so you're matching strength with strength, let's put it that way. And so there is a balance there based off of the, you know, that there's both sort of way out there. I would say, you know, a barbecue is really, I mean, it's a very hearty, tasty dish. It's not just, you know, it's not just a Greek salad or
right.
just a regular hamburger. It definitely carries a lot of flavors with it. So that's one way of matching it, and plenty of people do that. The other way is to find the beer that, again, sort of balances out by carrying the same flavor. So you would go for a very, you know, sweet, malty, a little bit tangy, and on our end, that's the amber ale. Our amber ale is sort of nicely hopped, so it has a little bit of a bitterness to it, but not too intense, and that sweetness that comes with all the malts that turn the beer amber, which are the caramelized malts, then have that same sort of sweetness that the pork brings with it, but I was talking to David about it today. One of the key advantages of beer over wine with any food pairing, is that the carbonation, the CO2 that every beer has, just cuts through any flavor. Every time you take a sip, it brushes off your tongue and your palate in some form, and so that's the key disadvantage of wine all around. So that's why there's a whole range of foods where wines,
right,
you know, don't quite, it just, you know, just doesn't work, you know, intense cheeses or anything that's really creamy, or your palate immediately gets sort of blocked off, and any wine you drink doesn't quite come through. And so, so those are the two sides. And
right. So yeah. Also, if somebody is, like, for instance, you know, I was trying to choose a beer, and the person would say, well, what kind of beer do you usually drink? Is the best way. And now I said, like, oh, I like Blue Moon. Well, I noticed you had, and I don't remember the name of the beer. What was the beer that you had that was similar?
It's called Wildflower. It's a Belgian wit. That's the general style. And so, I wouldn't necessarily say it's exactly the same, but they're in the same family.
I thought it was absolutely delicious.
I'm just making fun of Blue Moon here. There's a whole.
That's Coors.
Right. No, you know, they make it on a larger scale. And
yeah.
And so,
but
yeah.
I enjoy. I used to. I prior to that, I would. I was a Stella person. You know.
Drinkable beers,
was
absolutely.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, but once I tasted Blue Moon, I liked the taste better, and I, you know, when I got that, I enjoyed that with the orange. That's the thing
right.
that I liked about it.
But when you drink it, texture-wise, you enjoy more that you actually feel that you drink something that's a little thicker. Is that your impression when you drink any of these?
No, it's not even just, it's just taste. That's all. It's just, I don't drink much alcohol. Or as I say, I get drunk on scotch tape. That's how easily. You should see what happens when I have rye bread. But, or playing gin rummy. Okay,
yeah.
Anyway. But so I don't tend, so if I'm going to have a beer, I tend to drink beer because I find beer refreshing.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
right.
And more refreshing definitely than soda. It doesn't, you know, when it's hot out, that's the only thing I find that'll, you know, quench my thirst is a beer.
Yeah, and that's because the soda is typically made with a syrup. So beer, even though it is, you know, there is a sugar process involved with it, and it's not a syrup. You know, it's more organic. It comes from the grain. It comes from the yeast. It comes from, you know, it comes from everything that's used in it.
Right.
Whereas with who knows what they're putting in soda? You know, they're
right.
They have chemicals and everything in there, so you can clean car batteries with soda. So,
that's true. Oh, David, I need a description of that. What I has in that French fries appetizer thing?
It was mesquite cheddar fries, is what it was. So it's your standard French fries, of course fried, and then what we do is
you're
we
making
top
your
it
own,
with,
right?
Mm-hmm. And
you
we
make your
we
own
have
French
a
fry. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And
then
what was
we
in it?
Then we use a cheese sauce. It's kind of along the lines of a queso, but typically queso has some sort of spice to it. This is basically a yellow cheese sauce that we make in house.
Uh-huh.
And so that is poured on top, and then of course you got to add all the good stuff with the chopped bacon and the green onion and of course a little mesquite fry seasoning. To finish it off, and what it does is it just becomes this wonderful mix of gooey and crispy at the same time, and then once you get involved with that, you just can't stop. You gotta pull yourself away from it.
I have to tell you, I do a lot of food articles,
mm-hmm.
lots and lots, and I thought that's the best idea I've seen done with French fries. That's
well,
the tastiest thing I've had with French fries.
Oh, and it's the perfect companion with wheat beer. You know, it's absolutely. It's got that little, you know, citrusy tanginess, and that's the only thing you're missing on that dish. You got a little bit of bacon. You got a little bit of potato. You got a little bit of fries. You got a little bit of cheese, but they're all very subtle in that dish. You know, nothing's really. And so the BSD, yeah.
Now I understand
companion
you.
Right there.
I understand you have that you can go to the stores and buy the beer.
Yes, mm-hmm. we are currently selling around Greensboro really, but our five standards, and then we have three seasonals at this point that we add on from time to time, and Cool.
You don't have bottled the or canned or whatever. Is it bottled or canned?
Bottles, yeah, we're bottling.
In bottles. You don't happen to have the one that I had, the wildflower, would you?
Oh yeah, yeah, no, that's a standard at this point. Yeah, we have that.
So I can go to the I could go to the store and get this?
Yes, you can.
Yes.
You know, you got to send some to me. You have to.
we'll definitely work something out for you.
Yeah, I got to talk to you about this after. Yeah, I really, because this is cool. This is really cool. Because you know,
we'll have to get a case sent up for you for maybe 4th of July for your party. I'm sure you're gonna have a party up there, right?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. This is really it. Because I think this is a fabulous idea. It's I can't say I'm like the biggest beer person in the world, but as far as microbreweries, I mean this I at least this one I like. I should have done a beer tasting. You know, when you have like little 4 ounce things.
Yeah.
Yeah, do a flight of beers, you know. Yeah. But 'cause this is really gonna be quite interesting because the football team that I work with, the New York Sharks, the women are beer drinkers, and we all got hooked on Blue Moon. So I want to see what happens when I introduce this and I say, hey, you know, check this out and try this and see if you like this, better than Blue Moon.
Yeah,
I'm sure they will.
It's funny that you brought it up. Today I was talking out of all people, a banker who walked in, and we were just talking about, and Wildflower came up because he was, making the confession that, last year he only drank, regular golden ale and amber ale and so forth, and then, over time he discovered the wit beer, and now it's all he drinks. And then I was telling him the story, which is also quite unique, the Budweiser distribution, the truck driver who picks up our beer, to be delivered to all the grocery stores and whatnot. He is, he comes Tuesdays and Fridays to pick up a beer that we package, and every Friday he sort of sneaks around the brewery trying to find someone who will give him a six pack off the Wildflower for the weekend. It's really funny. They have all the beer in the world in their warehouse. Obviously, you could choose from probably anything, and it's really funny. So you're not the only one that tends to get.
Yeah. David, is there, you got a website for people to?
Yes, you can go to www.nattygreens.com. That's NattyGreenes.com. And we're hoping to launch a new website sometime soon because we just opened up our second brew pub in Raleigh. So we're getting a lot more exposure.
Wait a minute. Wait. You just opened one up in Raleigh?
Yes, we just opened one 2 months ago in Raleigh. So
okay, I'm going to – well, you're going to have to let me know because part of my trip that I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
I also get to go to Raleigh.
Oh, excellent.
So
when do you plan on being there?
I think I'm there like at the end of the week. Yeah, because
okay.
I go back to New York on the 22nd, and I'm leaving from Raleigh.
Okay, so the 22nd is what, Saturday?
So I'll be there, I think, probably like the 21st and the 22nd, I guess, that I'll be up there.
I'm actually going to be there on the 22nd. I helped open up the restaurant there, and I could certainly get you in touch with our brewer, Mike Morris, over there, as well as the GM, Susan Nelson. So, then you can try some new stuff
it'll give me an opportunity to do a small flight. I'm gonna have Jennifer from tourism. She'll be with me.
Oh great.
Really?
Well, yeah. Well, what's great about having brew pubs is we also of course Sebastian oversees all brewing for our company. But he's mainly, dealing with our off-site brewery, which is doing most of all the bottling and kegging of beers for distribution. But whenever you're dealing with coming to one of our brew pubs, then you're allowed to drink all those beers. But you're also you get the benefit of trying what the on-site brewers are working with, and that's what's great about beer is you have a lot of a lot of play there where you can really go for different tastes, and you can, you know, it is a science. People like to they mess up thinking that making beer is an art form. It's really, it really is a science, but the only place where you really get to kind of have the art form is where you get to introduce new flavors.
Do you think that in terms of having beer, that like, and I call it pub food, and that's what you have, pub food. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you're not coming in to have a Chateaubriand, you know what I'm saying?
All right, right.
That pub food is the is goes the well with beer?
Well,
that, that's
just,
the, like the best thing?
Yeah, it just seems like a traditional fit, you know. Who doesn't like, you know, chicken wings in a beer watching the football game, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's just, it's just a natural, natural way of things, especially in America. Now, I know that, you know, certainly Sebastian can tell you a lot more, but one of my favorite places is, you know, the beer garden that's up in where your neck of the woods, up in Queens, in Astoria. Now, drinking beer there is a little different than drinking it at our brew pub because, you know, you're still getting, you know, pork seems to be a very common food when drinking beer. And But we do a lot of course, we do much more than just pork. You know, we do burgers and chicken sandwiches and everything in between and great big salads. But the thing about beer food and or pub food that, that really goes well with beer is the texture, and like Sebastian was saying, the beer cuts through everything. So you can go creamy with cheese or a sauce, or you can go spicy, and the beer will still complement it and cut right through and cleanse your palate. And it's not like it, even though beer, some people like to think it, it weighs you down. I tend to disagree. I mean, it, there is a little more of a fullness whenever you're doing it, but we're not talking about American light lagers, you know. We're talking about ales and full full flavored beer. So that's the difference. The benefit of being able to go to a brew pub and eat and drink our beers is the freshness of everything and how everything cuts through and really really goes well together. And it really the whole beautiful thing about it is you're really sitting down and enjoying time with who you're around, or whether you go there by yourself, or you're meeting friends, or you're just meeting people as you get there. It's just a great environment to sit and enjoy a couple of beers and maybe grab a bite to eat.
Yeah. Well, when I get a chance, I'm going to have you. Is your is the menu online?
Yes, you can go on the
okay.
website. You can there's a PDF file that you can pull up.
Great, great. Yeah, because when I do the article, the articles that I'll be doing, you know,
right.
I love to, like, I describe, you know, what I ate and, you know, stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
this way I'll be able to do that. And I warn people, when I write, I, you know, please don't drool on your computer. But,
well, there's no smell-o-vision on your computer.
Yeah, yeah. But, well, it's great having you both. And, David, I'll be in touch with you,
Thanks,
you know, to talk about, you know, both going to Raleigh and some other things
sure.
that we discussed,
right, too. Absolutely, yeah. No, it was my pleasure.
Yeah, so that's great. Well, have a great evening and, you know, keep that wildflower brewing for me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the big season is just coming. It's just getting warm here, yeah.
Okay.
Very well.
Right,
well, you have a good night.
All right.
Yep, sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for visiting us in Greensboro, and we'll look forward to having you in Raleigh.
Okay.
Okay, bye, Mo.
Bye. Oh, yeah. That was great stuff here. Okay. This is interesting, you know. I don't know, like, who's going to call me. Okay, I'm clicking and putting you on the, okay. I have Amelia now, don't I? Do I have Amelia?
How are you?
Oh, just fine. I got to tell you, I was so impressed with the museum. And I have to tell you, well, I'll let you describe the whole thing, but I just want to say that I was impressed because I'm not the biggest museum person, you know, and it's and there was the way it was set up, the interactive and the, you know, everything about it, it wasn't like this, I can't tell, like this kind of boring thing. You know what I mean? Do you understand what I mean? It wasn't boring.
We're excited that you enjoyed the experience. We wanted to be very creative about how we told the story. And so we had a variety of perspectives involved. First of all, we wanted those who were participants in the civil rights movement and the sit-in movement particularly to see themselves, to see an authentic story told. But
right.
as important was that we would present a captivating account for younger generations, unborn at that time. And so it's one thing to read about history. It's another thing to have a more tactile kind of experience.
Right.
That's what we wanted to do.
Well, first let's go into, you know, as we just, as my listeners are probably going, what the hell are they talking about? So let's tell everybody, what is the story? What is the whole concept behind this?
Well, the International Civil Rights Center and Museum is dedicated to the memory of the four young men who were freshman students at North Carolina A&T State University, who on February 1st walked into historic, the chronicle of the civil rights movement in America. As they asked to be served at an all-white lunch counter in downtown Greensboro. Many of us who lived in that era know that Jim Crow laws permeated the South, and in some instances, that kind of segregated lunch counter experience was in a variety of other locations around the country. But for all of a number of reasons, this particular protest struck a chord, ignited a fire that spread quickly across the South. And within 60 days, there were more than 50 cities that replicated these lunch counter sit-ins from Texas all the way to the East Coast. And so Greensboro is viewed as a catalyst in revitalizing the civil rights movement in 1960. I think one of the unique elements of our story is that the sit-ins began on February 1st, but they continued until July 25th. And so the account of the discipline that it took, the fact that these were young people of every race and description who came together to sit at the lunch counter in nonviolent protest, makes this one of the most remarkable stories of this period.
Now, this lunch counter, this was part of Woolworth, right?
That is correct.
And this is not a replica that you have there. This is the actual lunch counter?
The lunch counter actually was one of the largest in all of the F.W. Woolworth structures. The original was an L-shaped lunch counter that could hold more than 60 to 75 customers. The short portion of the lunch counter has remained in its original footprint since that date in 1960. The longer portion was cut into in the mid-80s by the Woolworth management so they could increase the amount of individuals served. So that portion of the lunch counter, part of it sit in the Smithsonian. Another portion sits in the Raleigh History Museum and then in Greensboro Historical Museum. The pieces that were left were reconstructed and augmented by our exhibit fabricators. All of the stools that appear there are original stools.
Mm-hmm. And you get to see the old prices, so, huh?
It is not only interesting and humorous, but when you see a soda for 5 cents or
Yeah.
Turkey dinner for 65 cents.
I know.
That's another era.
Yeah. So let's kind of describe the different types of things you have there to view. I mean, it's like we're looking at, and I have to call it an incident that now has become a museum, but there's different ways of seeing all of this and different views of it. So let's get into what, you know, when you're doing a tour of it, what kind of things are you looking at?
Well, there are 13 specific installations that comprise our core exhibition. The introduction to the experience is called A Complex Tapestry, and that is an audiovisual presentation that marks the advent of the whole question of discrimination from slavery to a more modern era. So that video takes us from the arrival of slaves into post-Reconstruction era. That is followed by a soundscape, a combination of images and other sounds that mark some of the more horrific scenes from a period of violence in our nation's history. And they are lynchings and bombings and the protest water hoses beating against the skin of the protesters, and a reproduction of the famous Emmett Till photograph that appeared on the cover of Jet magazine after that 13-year-old boy was bludgeoned and murdered in Mississippi. And so what we wanted to do was give a graphic introduction to what was the context that led up to this moment that changed America.
Right.
Larry Burks. And then once that is presented, we transition into the lunch counter scene, and which gives a recreation of the 6 months of the Woolworth sit-in protest. And then following that is an interactive table that shows a map and how the protest spread across the South. That was called Spreading Like Wildfire. And then the visitor enters the portal to the core exhibition called the Battleground.
Mm-hmm.
The Battleground is created, first of all, in a way that introduces a visitor to a maze called Access Denied, and that is created to represent the obstacles that were ever present if you were an African American. It governed where you slept, where you worshipped, where you ate, where you went to school, where you worked, and how you traveled there. And so what we have in that area is an example of obstacles that you bumped into at every turn in society. And so whether that is a segregated hospital, a whites-only drinking fountain, a whites-only beach, advertisements in newspapers, there are authentic examples of each of those. There is a soda fountain, a soda machine, that sat between a colored and white waiting room with different prices to show that inherent discrimination was very much endorsed in terms of corporations. And so we try to make this a graphic and tactile experience.
Okay. And by the way, is it because I lived my whole life in New York City, unless I was reading the papers every day, because I didn't experience any of these things happening in New York City. Was this relevant to the South that things like this were happening?
Well, there were instances where there were race riots in Kansas City, race riots in Detroit, and other places in the North. So there, mm-hmm. what discrimination was not exclusive to the South, but certainly more rampant. You saw evidence of violence inflicted in ways that you did not see them as frequently or prevalent in other areas of the country.
Okay. So then from there we went to an area, I guess the next portion seemed to be the church.
Nope.
Is that the next?
The church and the movement, what we wanted to do, because the faith community created such a strong foundation for the movement, the Black Jewish coalition that emerged, the whole question of the comparison and the contradictions, as much as houses of worship were places of empowerment and places where civil rights activists, Black and white, would gather, it also meant that they became sources of targets and victims. And so we have as one of our most precious artifacts actual shards of glass that were blown out of the window of the 16th Street Baptist Church in 1963, where members of the Klan planted a bomb and took four precious lives. And so we have that artifact shared with us by the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. That helps to make this area particularly meaningful. We also have the robe of Reverend Samuel Billy Kyle, who had invited Dr. King to Memphis in support of the sanitation workers' strike and was indeed standing next to Dr. King as he was felled by the assassin's bullet. And so we cherish that story and celebrate the role of the church and the faith community. There's a wonderful photograph of Dr. King for a mock-up of his first pulpit.
Right.
When he was called to ministry, and that picture was taken by the Washington Post's first African-American photographer. And his name is Matthew Lewis, who lives in Thomasville, North Carolina. But there are just wonderful examples of combinations of one-of-a-kind artifacts and others that amplify the story that's being told.
I think the next thing was that where the politicians were?
Well, the next area is school separate and unequal. And the highlight of that installation is a hologram of a lenticular picture that contrasts the funding.
Oh, right, yeah.
Images of white and Black classrooms, out of which the landmark Brown versus the Board of Education ruling came in 1954, together with facades of the Central High in Little Rock and the facade of at Ole Miss where James Meredith sought entry, and then again the photograph of former Governor George Wallace as he stood in the schoolhouse door protesting Vivian Malone's entry to the University of Alabama. So our attempt is to give living, vibrant examples of what was the reality during the period.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go into politics and the voting booth and commemorate the founding in April of 1960 as an outgrowth of the F.W. Woolworth's sit-ins was the creation of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in April of 1960. And SNCC had an extraordinary impact on voter registration and activism, and so we celebrate their activities there. We have, as you know, this was the infancy of television, and so we compare and contrast the coverage between majority and minority print media. We have in that section also one of the examples of the signing of the Voting Rights Act of 1965,
right.
And one of pens that President Lyndon Baines Johnson used in signing that act into law. We have actual poll tax receipts where African Americans were charged to register to vote. And then in that area also we have examples of literacy tests, actual tests from that era from the state of Alabama where blacks were questioned regarding things such as the preamble to the Constitution.
We all didn't answer the questions correctly.
Exactly.
I'm going, oh, I don't know.
Together in that section, we also list every single African American elected to a federal office since the founding of that of this country. And
I recognize two of them from New York. One is I can't remember his first name. Weeks. His last name is Weeks.
Well, there are several because
Weeks and Floyd Flake, and I can't remember the guy's last name is Weeks. They're both from Queens, from where I live.
But among that list is Charlie Rangel and Adam Clayton.
Oh yeah, I'm saying I recognize two of them just because of where I live, because I live in Queens, and I know two of them.
Ed Towns and others. So New York has one of the largest delegations among the states.
Mm-hmm. And then I think, what was the next thing? Then there was a whole wall.
Courts and the quest for justice.
Mm-hmm.
So many courts were our option of first and last resort. And we amplify in that area the collaboration with Greensboro attorney J. Kenneth Lee and America's first black Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, who was a close confidant and worked together with Attorney Lee on a number of landmark cases. We had also the case of Reverend George Simpkins, who challenged both the practice of segregated medical attention at hospitals, and that ruling by the Supreme Court, along with another ruling here in Greensboro, that desegregated the public golf course called Gillespie Park, both of those brought by Dr. George Simpkins, and we highlight those in our storyline. We also have the robe of North Carolina's first Supreme Court justice, Black Supreme Court Justice Henry Fry, who became
mm-hmm.
Chief Justice here. Then we move into the area of direct action, which identifies with archival footage a number of the landmark instances of direct protests, large mass protests in the history of our country, and whether that's the Selma to Montgomery March or the March on Washington, the Montgomery bus boycott, we highlight each of those.
Now, I just want to kind of break in and to mention that there are different areas in town where you could see. Well, like there's one little a sculpture kind of thing near you that has the four guys. That's right outside.
There are a number of particular landmarks and statues around the city. On the North Carolina A&T State University campus is a wonderful, massive statue.
I got that one. I took a photo of that one. I got that.
All four of the original Greensboro.
Yeah.
We also have, and one of them is a New York native, Joseph McNeil, who is from Hempstead. And then we have also around the city, just as Chicago has cows and Houston has bulls and other cities, Greensboro has what is called the Coffee Cup Collaborative. And on many corners in downtown Greensboro, there is a bronze coffee cup, each of them done by a different artist, that is designed to commemorate the first word spoken in the sit-in protest. Well, Ezell Blair, now Jabril Kazan, asked for a cup of coffee. Those were the first words spoken at the lunch counter in this protest. And
right.
So the Coffee Cup Collaborative celebrates that.
Do you have either a book or a video for people to buy afterwards?
There are a number of videos. We don't have a video of the items in the museum, but there are some wonderful productions that deal with the sit-ins, including February 1, which was done by PBS, and a number of other video opportunities, and both adults and children's books in our gift shop.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking is I happen to know somebody who works at the Hempstead Public Library, and I thought that would be a great thing because I understand that it gets very crowded for February there, and that would be an interesting thing for people to connect with somebody from Hempstead.
That in that area they just had a film retrospective, and they had produced a document on Joseph McNeil. So,
oh, okay.
We would be excited to share whatever we have with the area.
Sure, I'll make it happen. I'll make the connection.
Well,
so you were saying that right now you have to go on a tour. So it's not
We have docent guided tours right now, but we are looking forward as we approach the summer to initiate self-guided tours throughout the museum. There are going to be audio components to supplement that visit, but we are anxiously looking forward to that inaugural tour.
And by the way, what has been your connection with this whole thing that you got into it, that made you get into this whole thing?
Well, I often say that the whole question of this history is in my DNA. My mother was a 1936 graduate of University of Michigan, and she later wrote the history of the education of freed slaves by the Presbyterian Church. She was an archivist, and so I have revered this history most of my life, and so I was just excited to learn of this project and traveled here to help bring the project to conclusion.
And Amelia, what is your position there again?
I am managing director for development.
Okay. The show is going to end soon. I don't want to, John, I don't want to cut you off. So I just want to get what's the website that people can go to?
It is www.sitinmovement, no dash, sitinmovement.org.
Okay, that's great. It was fabulous. It was great talking with you. It was great meeting you. And I'll be back with you to get in touch with you at another time when I'm doing the writing. Okay?
My pleasure, and I want to invite your listeners to join us here in Greensboro for this wonderful experience.
Okay. Well, thank you, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. Yes, people. I don't know what the next show. I'll be doing another show while I'm here in North Carolina. Kind of tune in and check to see. As I said, I'm going to Charlotte, Raleigh, Pinehurst, and I'll be doing hopefully like two more shows this week. So. Have a great day, evening, or whatever. And again, I apologize. apologize. What can I tell you?